Hey, you're listening to the Smoke Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Pittman. Smoke Meat is brought to you by Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Oh man, I love going to Joe's. Every time you go, they make you feel like you're at home. First time I walked in, they did it, and they do it every time now. Man, you go in there, Jeremy and the gang just know how to treat everyone, and they do it. They know that you are important, and they make you feel that way. So going down to Joe's, remember I goes to Joe's, and so should you. That's Joe's Underground at the corner of 8th and Broad in Augusta, Georgia, in the bottom of the Lamar Building. Oh, man, another one of our fine sponsors, WW Restaurant Equipment in Thompson, Georgia, just waiting to hear from you. They're at 1894 Moose Club Road in Thompson, Georgia. So go on and give Blake Harrison a call. Man, he can set you up with anything you need, from a single spoon all the way up to everything you need to build a restaurant with. He supplies everything but the labor. He doesn't build restaurants, but man, he can hook you up. Oh man, he's got a lot of new equipment, a lot of used equipment if you're on a budget. He knows how to fix you up. He's a good guy. You go in there, you never know what you're going to find him doing. He could be boiling peanuts someday, and he does really good boiled peanuts. So go on in there and check him out. That's WW Restaurant Equipment at 1894 Moose Club Road in Thompson, Georgia, or give him a call. 706-595-9511. Also, we're sponsored by Four Points Trading Company. They make some of the best soy candles I've ever smelled in my life. I've never been a big candle guy until I found them, and I was hooked. They've got what I like to call man-scented candles. You know, they've got, you know, I've burned one down here that we had gasoline, we had motor oil, and we had firewood. And it smelled like I was sitting outside my friend's shop, just sitting around the fire pit. It was so awesome. And they just sent me a big box of holiday scents that are just knocking my socks off. You know, right now I've got peppermint burning down here in the studio, and it smells so good. It's not overpowering, but it smells really great. So check them out at Four Points Trading Company. That's fourpointstradingco.com. And put in promo code SMOKEDMEAT. And you'll get 10% off. So it's a win-win. Today, I have a repeat guest. And man, I was so thrilled when we got back together. Mr. Howard Bloom. I love Howard so much. He is just his mind. I would just love to walk around in it for 5 minutes. He is such an awesome guy. And y'all know I don't talk politics on this show. That's one of my hard rules. We talk politics a lot on this one because I respect Howard's opinion, and he doesn't go at this emotionally. You know, he isn't just hardcore either way. He goes for the truth. That is Howard's religion, is the truth, and you can tell because he makes so many great points. He's such a smart guy, and you know, he remembered everything we said from the last time we talked, and he's such an awesome guy. You're gonna love this. So I'm gonna shut my cake hole, and we're gonna listen to Howard some now. You're on Smoke Meat. Hey, it's good to talk to you again, Howard.
It's so good to see you again, or hear you again.
It is definitely good to hear you again, too, Howard. I'm looking forward to actually being able to travel one day and actually getting to meet you.
And oh, that would be neat.
Yeah.
That would be so much fun. It's ridiculous.
Definitely, definitely. And I have started recording now.
And, okay, great.
You just did the perfect opening. It was just beautiful. It's been a long time since I've gotten to talk to you, and I've actually started to call you a few times, and I got sidetracked and said, well, he's probably busy right now, because I know you were constantly on the go. I mean, always.
Even my phone calls are booked 2 weeks in advance.
Nice. There's so much that's happened, and, you know, I got to see the documentary.
Right. Oh, terrific. What did you think?
I've not had a movie that actually touched my soul in a long time, and that one did.
Oh, that's just wonderful.
The little things, you know, the name sewn on the shirt, so nobody has to think about that. That is amazing, the details that you think of that nobody else does.
Well, that's the benefit, Brad, of being a perpetual outsider. The movie Brad is talking about is The Grand Unified Theory of Howard Bloom by Charlie Hoxie, who has won 3 Emmys, and the film has now won 2 awards. It won Best Picture at the Design Science Film Festival in California, and it won Best Feature-Length Documentary at the Knopf Film Festival in Italy. And, you know, it's a strange festival season, film yeah. festival season, because yeah. you can't have live audiences. Except in Italy, they got away with it. But then, of course, their COVID rates skyrocketed again. Yeah. There was only this brief window of time which you could have a live film festival. But festivals are finding their way around it, so we'll see what happens with the subsequent film festivals. But that is so good to hear, Brad, because I was trying to explain to my girlfriend earlier tonight that somebody made a very valid criticism of me. I have a lot of trolls on Facebook and on YouTube. And one of the trolls said, "Hey, this guy's been on the biggest podcast in the world, and the most he can get is 800 to 1,000 viewers for his YouTube episodes." And that's true. He's talking about Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. And I did, I think it was 3.25 hours mm-hmm. on the Joe Rogan show, and about 1 million people have seen that.
Yeah.
And yet my YouTubes only get about 1,000 viewers or a little bit less. And it's disheartening sometimes. But what I realized was, look, every one of these YouTube videos I put out is a truth that I believe is absolutely vital
yeah.
to other people's lives. I could try to do something different that would get more followers, but that's not what I'm on this fucking planet for.
Yeah, you know, you got to be honest with people.
Yeah,
honest with yourself.
Exactly. Right. So those truths are very important, and whether people watch them or not, those are the things that I believe must be said. Mm-hmm. So we shall see in the course of time, because there many of them are holding up and proving to be prophetic.
Yeah.
And hopefully we are entering a new era of honesty and truth, because we've had the lenses through which we see have been shattered over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Because we've been fed what initially was 12 lies a day by, I was going to say the Trump administration, but no, that's inaccurate, by Donald Trump himself. Mm-hmm. He is not a truth teller. He's just the opposite in ways I've never expected ever to see in my life. Well, then the figure went up to something like 40 lies a day. Mm-hmm. And we used to have something in the old days, pre-Trump, called fact checking.
Yeah.
And in the old days, when something newsworthy happened, I used to be able to fact check it heavily before I did, because I'm on Coast to Coast, the highest rated overnight talk radio show in North America, and I'm on that show at least once a week. Mm. Sometimes a little bit more. So when something extraordinary comes up in the news, I got to fact check it. Well, once Donald Trump entered the scene, the number of newsworthy statements that were being made went up to so many a day that there was no way in hell I, a limited human being with limited staff, could possibly fact check them all. Mm-hmm. And there's this thing in psychological research, and it's called learned helplessness. You take a dog, poor baby, we should never do this to dogs. You put them in a cage that has a wire floor. Mm-hmm. And the wire floor is electrified. So at periodic intervals, you give the dog a shock at unpredictable intervals. Now, you put another dog in the cage next door, and the other dog has only one thing that's different. He's on the same shock floor, but he has a button he can push to turn off the shock. Mm-hmm. So, and it used to be thought in the 1950s that executives get ulcers because of the stress of making decisions. So in the paradigm of the 1950s, the dog that's just coasting, that doesn't have to do anything, should end up healthier than the dog that has the executive responsibility of turning on or off the shock, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
It's not the way it worked out. It turned out that the dog that had a sense of control via that on-off button stayed healthy. The dog that had no control over his situation, his hair fell out, his skin ulcerated, he began to have internal problems. He was a mess.
Huh.
20% of the dogs who were given no control over their situation whatsoever went into something called learned helplessness. They just lay on the floor and they took every shock. Mm-hmm. And the remarkable thing was that if you opened the door to the cage with the dog that had the control button, the dog did the obvious thing. It walked out, and that was the end of the shocks. Mm-hmm. If you opened the door to the cage with the dog who had no control button, 20% of the time, that dog would just lay on the floor, ignore the fact that the cage door was open, and take shock after shock after shock. And that's what happened to a lot of us, learned helplessness. Mm-hmm. When the Trump administration steamrolled us, because there were so many of what Kellyanne Conway called alternative facts flooding us, that there was no way in hell we could fact check them. And it overloaded our system. And back in Hitler's day, Hitler had a brilliant minister of information, mm-hmm. Goebbels. You've heard of him. Everybody's heard of him.
Yeah.
And Goebbels promoted an idea called the big lie. If you told a lie so big, so absurd, that it just left the bounds of reality behind, people lost the ability to fact check it and would believe it. And we've been living through 3.5 years of that. And hopefully, and that means that there is a field in philosophy called epistemology. And it's about how we see or perceive the truth. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no absolute truth, so how we try to perceive the truth, at least. Well, the Trump administration destroyed the epistemology of America. It shattered the perceptual lenses through which we see. And now we have to see if in the next 4 years we can reassemble those perceptual lenses and adhere to truth. Now, why is truth important? Last time we talked, I told you, when I was a kid, this book opened up on my lap. I was 10 years old. I was terribly unwanted. No other kid wanted to have anything to do with me in Buffalo, New York, and my parents didn't want to have anything to do with me.
Yeah.
And this book opened up in my lap that I'd never seen before, and it said the first two rules of science are these: the truth at any price, including the price of your life. And it gave the example of Galileo, and it said that Galileo would have been willing to go to the stake and be burned alive to defend his truth. Now, that turned out to be wrong, but I wouldn't find that out for 30 years. I needed that heroic vision.
Yeah.
And look at things run under your nose as if you've never seen them before and then proceed from there. And it gave the example of Anton von Leeuwenhoek, the guy who invented the microscope. Mm-hmm. And who looked at pond water and discovered we were sharing this planet and have been from the very beginning with this entire cosmos of microorganisms we had never seen before. Well, that first rule, the truth at any price, including the price of your life, has been my guiding, those two rules, as a matter of fact, have been my guiding religion for the last 67 years. And so the truth means everything to me. And I have told truths under circumstances where I knew I could lose my entire career.
Yeah.
For saying those things. Or I have seen, in one case, a beating taking place, and I'm a little guy. And I, you know, put me into the ring. This was done once at a summer camp with a kid as small as I am with boxing gloves on, and I'm flattened with my nose bleeding in the first 1.5 seconds of the match.
Mm-hmm.
But when I saw a person being beaten, and it was obvious that the way he was being beaten, they would have beaten him to death, I ran up to these people who may have been carrying guns, who may have been carrying knives, and stopped them. It's the truth at any price, including the price of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, America will be allowed to get back to some standard of truth.
Yeah.
In fact, to the highest standard of truth, again. Now, it doesn't mean we'll all have the same truth. We won't. And our not having the same truth is an advantage to our society, because every society is a learning machine, and every society is constantly competing with other learning machines for position on a pecking order of nations. And right now, we have China to beat, and we have Russia that's been trying to take us down. despite the fact that it's got an economy less than the size of Italy's.
Yeah.
But it's been doing a very good job of taking us down. And we have been, the free world is used to looking to us for leadership. But when we have the worst track record of any nation on earth in confronting COVID, how can they trust in our judgment? So hopefully their trust in our judgment can be restored. Hopefully the Western world can be restored. I work with a partner. I'm heading 5 space projects. And one of those space projects is with Harry Hamlin, the actor who was voted the sexiest man in America by People magazine sometime around 1988.
Yeah, I remember.
And Harry's terrific. His family is nuclear physicists and major scientists, and he's heavily involved in science too. And he predicted that if Donald Trump won this election, that it would literally be the end of the world. What did he mean? He meant Donald Trump loves dictators, and he loves Vladimir Putin. He loves Xi Jinping. He said about Xi Jinping when Xi Jinping made himself president for life of China, that's a great thing. Maybe we should try that here. He said that at Mar-a-Lago to a private group of contributors. And Harry's feeling was that America would cease to be the beacon of democracy to the world. And with America gone, other countries would start turning authoritarian, and they're already showing all kinds of signs of doing that. And as democracy winked out, and as the dictators for life took over the globe, crazy people would have their fingers on the nuclear button. And one of those crazy people eventually was going to push the button. Now, I wouldn't have believed that. I simply would not have believed that vision of Harry's.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were talking 4 months ago or so, it was back in March,
yeah.
Harry said there's going to be violence in the street. And I didn't believe him. And then George Floyd was murdered before our very eyes,
yeah,
by an arrogant son of a bitch policeman who was glorying in the fact,
yeah,
that he had a man beneath his knee who was dying. He was glorying in it. You could see it in the videos.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Harry was right. There was violence in the street. Now, whether that violence in the street was caused, it certainly wasn't caused by the demonstrators. I've been in demonstrations like that, and I've seen violence taking place, and I have resented it bitterly because it so dramatically misrepresented what the rest of us were there for. And I saw the protesters for the George Floyd killing here in New York, and they were so peaceful, so well-disciplined,
yeah,
and so wearing their masks that it was ridiculous. So the question is, who caused the violence? Was it Antifa or was it the white supremacists,
yeah,
who had been looking for a civil war to cleanse America of all races but the white Aryan race? They had been looking for this for 40 years.
Yeah, you know, that weekend, I actually worked on the ambulance that weekend, and we were expecting a lot of things because of all that. And, you know, I'm
right,
just south of Atlanta. The sheriff's department,
right,
actually gave us Kevlar to wear that weekend.
And, amazing.
And we
so
had...
What happened?
We had, on Saturday night, there were 2 block parties about a mile apart between two, I want to call them gangs, but it's groups that just hate each other, that fight every chance they get. And that night, everything could have popped off and it could have gotten really nasty. And everybody just forgot about all that for that night. And everything was peaceful. Everybody had a good time. We didn't have a single call about any of that.
That's true. Wonderful.
The next day, there were 2 demonstrations scheduled. They had SWAT standing by. We had helicopters standing by. I mean, everything was high alert. Everybody was peaceful. They said their piece, and that was it. And the news didn't show any of that. They showed all the big things.
That sounds wonderful.
It was,
I mean, Brad, it sounds like heaven. It sounds like the way we wish the American system would always work.
Yeah.
And it's so far the way the American system is working in this the days after the election.
Yeah.
So far, the remarkable thing about these days after the election is we were expecting, many of us were expecting civil war.
Yeah.
Many of us were expecting the militia groups with their AR-47s, their automatic assault rifles, to be out on the street the way they were in Michigan when the president said, liberate Michigan.
Yeah.
And we were expecting those people to fire those guns the way that kid, I forget his name, fired his weapons in Minneapolis, I think it was, and killed two people.
Yeah, he was an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, we saw, but we were expecting to see a lot more of that, and we were expecting to see Antifa. Now, in fact, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is radically disbelieved by people on the right, but the Southern Poverty Law Center totals up the number of deaths at the hand of Antifa over the last 25 years as zero, and the number of deaths at the hands of the white supremacists as 347. Mm. So, nonetheless, we were, people like me were expecting civil war. I did a total of 3 YouTubes on the possibility of an upcoming civil war.
Yeah.
And it hasn't materialized.
Yeah.
And in part, it hasn't materialized because Joe Biden did something absolutely unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this before we turned on the record button.
Yeah.
But it's worth telling the audience.
Yeah.
When Joe Biden brought in Kamala Harris as his vice presidential candidate, she is the ultimate attack dog. If you've seen her in congressional hearings questioning people, she gets to the point in 2 sentences, and the point is devastating. Mm. She is an impossible force to resist. She is an attack dog. And I expected to see Kamala Harris making headlines with attacks on Donald Trump every single day until the election. And that never happened. And it never happened, apparently, because Joe Biden had a policy. He was going to campaign the way he was planning to govern.
Yeah.
He was going to campaign to bring people together, not to pull them apart. He was not going to contribute to the acrimony between the two sides in this potential war, the left and the right. He was not going to do that at all. Now, if I had been his advisor, I would have said, this is crazy. Your being so restrained is going to cost you the election. You will never be elected president of the United States. And, Brad, I would have been wrong.
Yeah.
Because at this moment, it looks like Biden is ahead of Donald Trump by 4.2 million votes.
Yeah.
Now, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump by 2.8 million votes, and it wasn't enough to get her the Electoral College. Joe Biden has nearly doubled that lead.
Yeah.
Over Donald Trump. And at last count, he was way over 270 in the Electoral College.
Yeah, I think it was 310 or something. I mean, it was a ridiculous great number. I mean,
right.
There's no question.
Is this so are you right? Is this country hungry to unite on the basis of what pulls us together, what we have in common, rather than divide over our differences?
Yeah.
Apparently that hunger for unity is huge.
Yeah.
So I told you that I went on Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast is the highest radio overnight talk radio show in North America. I do it once a week, usually on Wednesdays. And last week I did it twice because of the election.
Mm-hmm.
And one night I went on and said, the astonishing thing about this election season is that we expected civil war in the streets. We expected Antifa to erupt, and we expected the AK-47 crowd to erupt at each other.
Yeah.
And we've had one of the most remarkable pieces I have ever seen in my life. And let us hope it stays that way. And George Norrie is my host. George Norrie is a Republican. This is a Republican radio show. I am the token Democrat and the token liberal. And George Norrie said, basically, let us hope we come together. And one of the things that Biden's speech made me realize is those guys with the AK-47s who showed up to liberate Michigan after Trump called for the liberation of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
and those people in militia groups, those people call themselves patriots. They carry American flags. In other words, they believe in the principles of this nation. And they love those principles. Well, guess what? I'm on the left. I'm a liberal. But I love the principles of this nation, and I would be willing to live and die for those principles. What does that mean about me versus the AK-47 gang? It shouldn't be versus. We both love this country passionately, and we have more in common that unites us than we have that separates us. And Biden, with his remarkable reserve, holding things back, not allowing this to be a dogfight, a pit bull fight, has brought that potential unity that is so strong because we literally love our country. That's not just a euphemistic phrase that we love our country. It's not just poetry. It's fact.
Yeah.
We love our country and what this country stands for, and that is true on both the left and the right. And it is time for us to resume our rightful place in this world, and that is leading the Western Alliance. But we can only lead if our decisions are the best decisions that can possibly be made. And we, in the face of COVID, have been showing in a demonstrable way that we are making the worst decisions that could possibly be made. And how do we know that? Our COVID death total, which is now close to 240 million going on a quarter, 250,000 going on a quarter of a million. Mm-hmm. That death toll is the highest in the world. Today, we were the first nation to cross the 10 million COVID infection rate, but the death toll is what really counts. And we've had more deaths from COVID than England, France, Germany, Spain, and Italy combined. We've had more deaths from COVID. You know, Laura Ingraham likes to go on Fox and tell us that this is no worse than the common flu. Mm. Go on about your business. And Donald Trump has told us the same thing, especially after he had COVID. But the fact remains that we've had more COVID deaths than the common flu, auto accidents, household accidents, and murders combined. And we had that total number of deaths greater than all of that on a yearly. In other words, we've had more deaths in 6 months than all of the flu deaths, auto accident deaths, household accident deaths, and murders in a full year.
Yeah.
So, no, this is not comparable to the common flu. And Donald Trump knew that at one point. He may well have forgotten because I think his mind has shifts realities several times a day. But he knew that when he was talking to Bob Woodward in February. He said that this is far, far worse than the common flu.
Yeah, you know, but, I've been elbow deep in this thing since it started. You know, I'm a paramedic full time, and
wow,
this thing, I've seen it take people old. I've seen it take young. In shape, out of shape, this thing's not.
Well, I have a neighbor across the street, and you probably had this experience. He's an emergency room doctor, mm-hmm. and he loves his job.
Yeah,
or did love his job as an emergency room doctor. But when I ran into him in March or April, he was not the person I knew. He was devastated.
Yeah.
He was hollowed out, and he explained that it's because he sees people who are healthy and strong come into his emergency room, then go through a crisis that was going to determine whether they lived and died. It was a 48-hour crisis,
yeah.
and he's lost people who were, to him, young, healthy, and vigorous
yeah.
in a twinkle.
Yeah, I've watched
and it's, well, so you know, I only know from what he has told me, but he has been devastated every time I've run into him ever since.
Yeah.
And I have a friend whose father is a geriatric doctor, another person I run into every once in a while. And his dad, back in April or May, had lost 122 patients to COVID.
Man.
Can you imagine? You know this from your emergency medical experience. Every person you interface with is a person.
Yeah.
In your life, is a part of your emotional map of your world. And when that person disappears, a chunk has been torn from the skin on which that map of the world is written. Mm. It is painful. You lose something. So, and in a neighborhood like mine, there are no COVID cases.
Yeah.
Zero. So, but we're lucky, you know, the people in my neighborhood are not the service providers.
Yeah.
They're not the providers who are in, who are staring this down face to face every single day. So Joe Biden, as you said, before we went on the air, Joe Biden's reserve, his discipline in imposing what he regards as American values, even on his campaign to the nth degree, means that let me take a step backwards. Mm-hmm. On the left, it was said as recently as yesterday that that Donald Trump never got a handle on Joe Biden, never found a way to attack him. Mm-hmm. That is so wrong. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a myth. And it's wrong because the president called Joe Biden Sleepy Joe. And his minions at Breitbart and Fox News got across the idea that Joe Biden was senile and shuffling and old and was deteriorating before our very eyes.
Yeah.
And they did it with a technique that they perfected when they were attacking Hillary Clinton. We've all heard this phrase, double take, to do a double take when you're surprised at something. But I had never seen it in my life and didn't realize I'd never seen it until I saw a clip that the right was using to defame Hillary Clinton. And it was a clip of Hillary Clinton doing a double take, except there's something called the caption factor. When you see a picture, mm-hmm. you don't see what is right there in front of your very eyes. You see what you are told is right there in front of your very eyes. The caption is what you see. And this was captioned as, see, Hillary Clinton is losing it. She's having some sort of convulsion. No, she wasn't having a convulsion. She was doing a double take. Well, this business of taking small clips out of context, which you could do also with Donald Trump to the nth degree, is flubbing and floundering, was used to make Joe Biden look like he was senile and barely capable of shuffling and putting one step before the other.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, well, there's a phrase in a book by Harrison Salisbury on the Russian Revolution about how when the opposing side won the Russian Revolution, you could see men grow in front of your very eyes. They grew, one of the observers said, in the mud of the revolution.
Yeah.
And you could see Joe Biden growing. And when he gave his acceptance speech, which I felt absolutely compelled to watch from beginning to end, he was, as you said, lucid.
Yeah.
He was articulate. He had it together. And he had this concept that we should love each other because we love the same thing, whether we're on the right or the left. He had a handle, not just a handle. He was totally focused on that concept.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, you've listened to my show. I don't get political. And this is a very special show because this is the most politics I've talked in a long time. And I've got friends who love Trump. I've got friends who love Biden. Like I told you, I'm in between. You know, I'm conservative on some things, liberal on others, and I'm not really a party guy. But, you know, it's funny because, like I say, before the election, man, he looked – I actually had a theory, and I know you're a big fan of theories. My theory was he was going to get elected. If he got elected, they were going to have him declared incompetent. Boom, Harris is president. Okay, cool. And that was my
theory. Well, it was a popular idea in one form or another. Yeah. I get inundated with emails from both the left and the right. And on the right, what I kept hearing was, you have to understand that if you're voting for Biden, you're voting for Harris as president.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Harris has been a prosecutor. You know, she's accused of being a person who would be soft on crime. She's not soft on crime at all.
Yeah.
She's been accused of being too hard on crime. But no one in the history of the United States has had the amount of experience that Joe Biden has had in government. He's been in government for 48 years.
Yeah.
And we thought that was a bad thing back in 2016. We called it the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out it can be a good thing. When Kamala Harris attacked Joe Biden at one of the debates, what was she attacking him for? For being friends with two guys from the South. Two segregationists from the South.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that significant? Because Joe Biden will work with whoever is there to work with in order to pull functional coalitions together. And what do I mean by functional coalitions? Coalitions that can get something done.
Yeah.
And he demonstrated it when he won the Democratic nomination. And he did it in a very simple way that nobody seemed to see. He made phone calls to all of his opponents.
Mm-hmm.
All of the people who had been tearing him down, well, he didn't tear anybody down, but all the people who had been tearing him down. And he won each one of them over. Pete Buttigieg, Elizabeth Warren, all of them.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And they all agreed, Bernie Sanders, and they all agreed to go to work to help elect him president. He put together a functional team, a team of rivals, a team of people who had been enemies just the day before. And he did it in less than 2 weeks. It was astonishing. And he took the person who had attacked him the most bitterly in the debates, and he chose her as his vice presidential candidate.
Yeah.
And Doris Kearns Goodwin, the historian, in writing about Abraham Lincoln, named her book A Team of Rivals.
Mm-hmm.
And she named it because Lincoln had done exactly the same thing. He'd gone to these strong and arrogant rivals who had tried to demolish him in the presidential candidate elections. And he won each one of them over, and the very strengths that had made them such formidable enemies were strengths he put to work on behalf of the United States of America.
Yeah, and you know that
he found the...
Okay.
But just another word, he found the strongest people. Now, when Donald Trump came to office, he promised us he knew the best people, and we would see the best people. But we didn't. Why? Because there is one... there's one token you must hand over to Donald Trump in order to take a position in his administration.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell him he is a stable genius.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell him he is absolutely brilliant. You have to tell him he has a foresight unlike the foresight of any other person who's ever been planted on this earth. And only if you become one of Donald Trump's chief praisers can you occupy a position.
Yeah.
Well, the further we got into the Trump administration, the more it became obvious that using this criteria for selection of people was not bringing us the best people. It was bringing us mediocre people. And this country, especially at a fraught time like this, cannot be run with mediocrity. China is about to surpass us in the size of its economy. China has a vision, a grand strategy. It's called the Belt and Road Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
It will link all of Europe and Asia and South America by high-speed rail and by ships of a size you've never seen before, operating in ports of a size you have sophistication that you have never seen before, and it will link 3.3 billion people and 60 countries together. Ooh. China will have its coalition of countries, and it will be larger than anything this world has ever seen. And if we don't have a president with equal vision, we are going to become a has-been.
Yeah.
And if we become a has-been, I mean, it wouldn't matter. Lots of states have become has-beens, right? But it does matter because we are the beacon of democracy to the world.
Yeah.
And democracy does count. And democracy's core values, tolerance, pluralism, freedom of speech, and a commitment to truth. Those are core American values. And if those values flicker out, and China's values, totalitarian values, only the guy at the top can tell you how to think. Only the guy at the top can write a little red book. Or in Xi Jinping's case, God knows what color the book is because it's available on your cell phone. Mm-hmm. But you have to kowtow to every single idea in that book, written by one dictator for life. That's the alternative.
Oh,
man. And an awful lot of humanity's creativity is going to wink out. We have people in this country who come from all kinds of countries where they would not have succeeded in the way they've succeeded here. And in Silicon Valley, it's people from India, mm-hmm. or whose parents were from India.
Yeah.
And they're doing astonishing things. On behalf of who? On behalf of you and me. They're giving us new capabilities. We have Elon Musk, the one man who has a vision that corresponds to the China vision of One Belt, One Road,
mm-hmm.
of 60 countries linked together by modern technology. That guy's Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He is an immigrant. He's from South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The guys running Microsoft and Google are from India. And if you test your Google periodically, you will note that every 6 months, Google is capable of doing things for you it wasn't capable of doing before.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We just upgraded my daughter's cell phones. And just one upgrade just does so much. You know, the two phones we're talking on right now have so much more computing power it took to send the first people to the moon. And that we can
hold them. And the guy who gave us these cell phones, Steve Jobs, was the son of a Lebanese immigrant.
Yeah.
So you take people who in their own countries would be stymied and unable to succeed, and you put them here, and whammo, they accomplish things that are utterly beyond belief, and in the process expand the powers literally of humanity.
Exactly.
So we have to protect that. It is profoundly important. Joe Biden is not the greatest public speaker in the world. He is not a rousing and incendiary speaker. People will not come 20,000 at a time to see him as if he's a circus act, which is what the Trump rallies have been. I mean, you've got to give Trump credit. Trump has specialized in one thing all of his life. In business, he's been a failure. He owes $400 million, and possibly he owes $2 billion. We do not know. In other words, he's taken the $414 million that his father gave him, and he's basically lost it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's managed to milk an extremely high-rolling lifestyle for himself out of his losses. And I forget where I was going with that train of thought. It was someplace very specific.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time to get back to being America.
Yeah.
And it is time to make America great again, because the Pew Research surveys have demonstrated that America is literally a laughingstock. I mean, the rest of the world laughs at a president who says, maybe we should inject bleach. Okay, now my friends on the right have told me unequivocally that the president never said such a thing, that it was a Democratic myth.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched him saying it. I watched him saying it on television. There's no question that he said it.
Yeah.
And he now says it was a joke. No, it wasn't a joke. He was very serious. He was looking at Deborah Birx, one of the highest ranking members of his COVID commission. And it was obvious that he was thinking, okay, I'm going outside the box here. I'm going a little out of the comfort zone, but he was looking to see if she's going to think I'm brilliant.
Uh-huh.
Well, nobody thought he was brilliant.
Well, you know, I think one thing that I hope Biden does, and, you know, it would be a wonderful thing, if he has a Twitter, just delete it or stay the hell off of it.
Well, that's not his thing.
Oh, man. But,
so what I was going to say is Donald Trump is a truly talented man. Mm. He's not talented at real estate. It's only the buildings that his father helped him build that have made money. A Trump Tower brings him $22 million a year, but his father helped him build that building.
Yeah.
He has lost money at every business he's ever done. He's had six bankruptcies.
Mm-hmm.
What is he brilliant at? Getting attention, getting publicity. And he's been working on getting publicity since the 1970s, and he's been brilliant at taking each year's publicity and notching it up, making it the platform for a higher level of publicity the next year.
Yeah.
So that gives him 50 years of publicity behind him. That's a lot of publicity. And that's what he's great at. I mean, he kept us entertained. You know, you every 3 hours, you knew there was going to be another Trump tweet that was going to be outrageous and was going to make headlines. And you couldn't stop watching.
Yeah.
No matter how much you hated Trump, you couldn't stop watching.
Yep.
It was like Plato. Plato's got this scene in one of his books where he's coming back to Athens from a trip, and his route is going to take him past the place where men are hung.
Mm.
And part of his mind is saying, let's not look at that. It's awful. It's deplorable. It's horrible. Let's just keep going straight to Athens. And another part of his brain is going, wait a minute, this is just too good to miss.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's gory, all of these skeletons hanging there and decomposing bodies hanging there, but who could resist? Well, guess which part of him wins?
Yep.
The rational, bright, and sunny part that wants to keep going to Athens, or the part that just can't resist the sight of the hangings, the body still hanging there. Well, it's the part that wants to see the hangings. That's the part of us that Donald Trump has been brilliant
at
tweaking and entertaining. Yeah. Every single day has been a reality TV show in the White House.
Yeah, you know, like when Howard Stern was starting to get big, you know, the station managers, you know, one of them just hated him. But his ratings were so high, they said, you know, the people that like him, listen to see what he's going to say next. The people that hate him,
right,
listen to see what he's going to say next.
It's a very good point. So Donald Trump has been brilliant at keeping us entertained. Mm-hmm. And I guess we owe him a certain debt of gratitude for that. But we need to get back to being a country people respect.
Yeah.
And we need to get back to talking to each other and loving each other.
Yep.
Loving each other.
I'm all over that one.
Yeah. So that's what I've been seeing from, you know, I had the privilege of being sick so I could watch news TV all day, including Fox.
Yeah.
And including MSNBC to get the two opposite sides of the story. So we'll see what I just finished doing, catching up on 4 days email.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that there was a certain pause around Wednesday where there was less Trump email than usual.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pace picked up on Thursday when they did the Trump defense campaign and the Trump election defense campaign. And it's been picking up ever since because they want money.
Oh, yeah.
To try to reverse the results of the election. But the election is just, the results are too big. And every time somebody interviews one of the counters, you know, the ballot counters say, there's no way we could have committed fraud. I mean, one thing that Donald Trump's lawyers and Rudy Giuliani are obscuring is the fact that all of these polling places
mm-hmm.
have a dozen cameras.
Yeah.
And many of them are live streaming what's on the cameras so that you can watch them on a government. If you find the appropriate government site, you can watch the ballot counting take place.
Mm-hmm.
And Detroit. The complaint was that Republican ballot count watchers were being excluded. Well, that was true. But you know why it was true? It was true because they were allowed, each side was allowed, 140 ballot counters of viewers. The Republicans were allowed 140 observers. The Democrats were allowed 140 observers. But many more potential observers showed up than that 140. And they were being excluded, whether they were Republican or Democrat, because there was no room for them in the room. Remember, we do have a COVID crisis.
Yeah.
And even when the judge came down with a decision that the instead of observing from 10 feet, that the observer should be able to observe from 6 feet. I'm sorry, that's murder.
Yeah.
That's a distance in which you can easily catch the coronavirus. And the coronavirus can kill you, and you know that better than I do.
Yeah.
So, so it's been, I mean, the astonishing thing, Brad, still remains that this has been a stunningly peaceful election week.
Yeah, I'm amazed by it because, you know, I've been working some through it, and I've been waiting for things to pop off, and they just haven't, and I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, it means American values are stronger than we thought.
Yeah.
Again, the American values of tolerance, pluralism, freedom of speech, and adherence to the truth, and people, civility. What we wondered was, has the civil fabric been sufficiently torn that this country would fall apart the way it did in the 1860s?
Yeah. You know, oddly enough, I think that the COVID thing has kind of helped with that civility, because I've noticed people are a lot nicer to each other now that we're out and about here in Georgia.
Right.
I mean, just little things, you know. I can go to walk in somewhere, somebody will see me 15 feet away and sit and hold the door for me. And that's just
wonderful.
You know, it's a small thing, but it's an awesome thing.
Right. Well, civic habits knit a nation together. And civic habits, I call it the infrastructure of habit. You know, countries have two things, an infrastructure of habit and an infrastructure of fantasy.
Yeah.
And their infrastructure of fantasy guides them on where to go next and gives them a sense of hope or a sense of despair. And the infrastructure of habit are the daily little habits of how we treat each other that really determine what kind of country we have. And so when you're talking about people 15 feet away holding the door open for you, you're talking about the strength of that infrastructure of habit that keeps a civic culture together. And when it comes to an infrastructure of fantasy, that's profoundly important. Because it determines whether we have hope or not. And my hope is in Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. If that man is killed, the only man who's capable of having a vision and then turning it into a reality in North America will have died, and the light will have gone out. We should have more than just one light, one visionary in North America. But at the moment, he's the only one.
Yeah.
And he's talking about point-to-point transport with his starships, his starship spaceships, which means you could go from Atlanta to Singapore in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
At least 40 minutes in the air. Then, of course, you have to get out to the place where these things take off and land and back to the city. But it's a big improvement over right now. I would imagine that Singapore from Atlanta is 18 hours.
Yeah, that's when you'll have time to watch more than one movie.
I mean, I used to do, they had me do two events in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and the total trip is 3-4 hours.
Oh, man.
So at least by the route that the conference promoter who was putting these things together around me booked. So, and I enjoyed it. But, you know, your battery runs out on your laptop. If they don't have electricity, you're screwed. If they don't have Wi-Fi, you're in big trouble. Nonetheless, this is going to be a radical change. And very few people are going to be able to afford it, but there are very few people who find the convenience of that extra 17 and a half hours free to do productive things. There are a small number of people who found that incredibly valuable. And who are valuable to you and me. Look at Elon Musk.
Yeah.
He's incredibly valuable to you and me. When I first saw him 15 years ago, you know, here I've worked with Buzz Aldrin, Edgar Mitchell, The Sixth Man on the Moon, with Michael Jackson, Prince, Bob Marley, Bette Midler, the 11th President of India, Dr. APJ Kalam, Aerosmith, Kiss, Run DMC, the list goes on and on and on. I've worked with a lot of very important people in my lifetime. And 15 years ago, when Elon Musk was a laughingstock at NASA, they were absolutely certain he would never amount to anything. And when he had never gotten even a tin can with a firecracker in it off the ground, mm-hmm. I saw him speak. And he said, I graduated from college. And I asked myself, what are the three things that are going to change humanity the most in my lifetime? And my answers were the internet, alternative energy, and space. So I went into item number one, the internet, and helped build PayPal. And came out of it, and he wasn't specific about the figure, but it's between $800 million and $1 billion richer because of PayPal.
Yeah,
and I went directly over option number two, alternative energy, and straight to option number three, space. Well, I didn't know this, but I apparently have this thing that goes off like an alarm clock in my gut when I see a superstar. Mm-hmm. And I knew the minute I saw him, remember, he'd never gotten anything off the ground, that kids would be following his role model 110 years from then. That's 95 years from now. I knew it. So I had four phone conversations with him, and I couldn't tell him why I was bothering to waste his time. And it took me 10 years to figure out. It's because that alarm thing in the gut that goes off when you see a Michael Jackson or a Prince. I mean, remember, when I started working with Prince, he was 19 years old, and nobody knew his name. It was going off, except it was going off on a level a little bit different from the norm. A little bit different from the way it went off for people like Michael, who to me is the closest thing to the divine on the face of the earth. Michael was amazing, and we probably talked about that last time, and if we haven't, we'll talk about it some other time.
Oh, yeah.
But I knew that I was seeing not just a superstar. I knew that I was seeing a mythic figure whose image would help reshape America and its infrastructure of fantasy for at least 115 years to come.
Yeah. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, he is very time conscious, and he, you know, like you, both of y'all stay busy. I mean, you're always moving and doing something, and that's awesome to me. And I used to wonder, and I used to work for a guy, the first job I had out of high school, I worked for a janitorial supply service, and I ran the guy's Christian bookstore.
Amazing.
And his name was Howard Hochrein, and I'll never forget what he told me. He said, the most successful person in the world has 24 hours in a day, just like you do. And that's always stuck with me.
Well, it's a good thing to live by, because I have to be very careful about the way I carve up my time, and I have to discipline. This is going to sound really weird. I've had to teach myself how to discipline my eyes. Mm-hmm. So they don't get distracted from what I'm doing. And I've had to, over the course of time, measure where allowing my eyes to go will waste me time, and where focusing my eyes will gain me time. Sounds crazy. Sounds insane. It's not easy to do. It took years to accomplish. But being able to focus your attention without losing the benefit of listening to all kinds of strange things from the left, from the right, from below, from above, because you need all those things. They're part of the fabric of your reality. They're, if you have a theory, they're part of what you base your theory on, or change your theory based on. But to do those things takes enormous discipline, and what Howard told you was the beginning of that discipline.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I also found out, you know, during the documentary I watched on you, was, you know, the two recorders that you keep on you all the time.
You know, right.
I know no one will ever hear those, but do you ever go back and listen to just see if you missed anything or needed help
remembering
something?
There's no time. I will never be able to do that in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So these are a record for people yet to come.
Yeah.
And you know the story. I mean, we'll tell the story for people who haven't seen this. I used to carry two little Santa clips on me. I carried two because each one would carry about 8 hours of sound, and I have a something like a 16-hour day and needed to record the whole thing. And now I have one recorder that will record for actually a couple of days straight. But the recorder is there because once upon a time, historians got wildly excited. It was about 40 years ago. They found the journals written by a woman whose husband was at the Crusades and who had to run the entire manor, complete with the castle, its servants, the serfs out in the fields, all of it. And she kept a daily record of what she was doing. And this, boring as it sounds, was an absolute treasure for the historians because it revealed more about the ways of life and the ways of life of women on a daily basis, the infrastructure of habit, than they'd ever had a glimpse into before in this particular period of time. And so I record, when I was sick in bed for 15 years with an illness, I got a call from Kenny Laguna, Joan Jett's manager, and he said, look, Joan is working with this advertising woman who's a genius, and she has she's just branded Nike, Reebok, Sony PlayStation 2, and Hummer, and she's a huge fan of your book. Would you mind if we put her in touch with you? And she started coming out and visiting me while I was laying here in my bed. And she eventually said, look, your real art is not just your books. It's your verbal presentation. And you should be recording everything you say. So we looked for a technology. We couldn't find one. A Sony recorder at that point would only record 2 hours. And how do you know which 2 hours to turn the recorder on for? You don't. And you, plus, you're humble. You know, you don't think that anything you're saying is all that worthwhile. Yeah. So you never turn it on. If you've got a recorder that's on all day, then you never have to make that decision. And then came recorders. One day a film crew came in to interview me, and the sound man didn't even take off his coat or hat. He went directly over to me, and he clipped this thing to my shirt. And it was a Sansa clip, and it would record 6 to 8 hours. I was amazed. I bought several of them. Immediately. So this, all this stuff we're talking about right now and this conversation that Brad and I had before we went on the air, it's all recorded on this device if I haven't bumbled it and hit the wrong button or something like that. But nobody's going to have time to listen to it during my lifetime. But 100 years from now, it could provide a extraordinary insight into what life was like in the early 2000s. Not, you know, it's not going to be what a normal life is like because there's nothing normal about my life at all. But one way or the other, even if seen through a distorted lens, it'll be a lens into our time and could be useful to somebody.
It may not be normal, but it is extraordinary. When I told you that, the documentary actually touched my soul. I've never said that about a movie before, but I was actually down here in my studio watching it. I don't normally buy movies. I'll rent them or whatever. And I said, I'm just going to buy this one. You know, I like Howard. I'm going to buy this movie. And I was so happy that I did. I mean, I just, man.
Well, I'm sitting here beaming. You have me absolutely beaming. So I should probably let you go. We've probably hit somewhere around the hour mark.
Yeah, we are just right on an hour.
Right. But if you want, we'll do this again because I enjoy it hugely. And I'm very grateful to you for debriefing me on this particular week, the election week.
Yeah.
Because it's been stunningly important. And there have been things like the Biden strategy based on stressing what we hold in common, not what differentiates us, that nobody seems to have seen. I haven't seen it commented on MSNBC. Of course, I'm not going to see it on Fox News, and those are the two things that I get the time to watch. So, but it's a very important thing to be aware of.
Yeah. Well, here's how much I value your opinion on this stuff. I actually had a guest a few days ago who, during our little pre-show thing, he started getting really political. And I told him, I said, I don't do politics on my show. And he said, well, it's going to be hard for me not to. I said, well, here's the thing. If you get political on the show, it's going to get cut off. It won't get aired and it'll be over, period. And
well, I'm so
I
glad
that
you let me get
it. Your
I'm
opinion?
So glad you let me do it. I mean, you have basically debriefed me on the week, and it's been profoundly, I'm profoundly grateful, Brad. Very grateful.
So your opinion means the world to me because you approach things realistically and straightforward by science, by the truth, and that works.
Well, we hope.
Yep.
Okay, well, I will see you next time.
All right.
And let us, and Georgia is the cusp of things right now. It's going to be the center of things for the next 2 months.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens.
That'll work.
Well, okay. Have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you again soon.
All right. Anytime you want back, you've got this number. All you got to do is call, and we are there, my friend. You take care.
Terrific. Have a good night, Brad.
You too. Bye.